from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Eric Westervelt, in for Michael Krasny. In this half hour, county shelters for neglected and abused children. These shelters are the first stop for many children removed from their homes by social workers and for those in between placements in the nation's largest foster care system. Yet, instead of serving as a safe haven for children, the San Francisco Chronicle found that many shelters often call law enforcement and funneled hundreds of children, some as young as 8 years old, into the criminal justice system for mostly minor incidents that rarely caused serious injury. A 14-year-old held in juvenile hall for 4 days for poking a caregiver with a candy cane. A youth who spent the night in jail for clinging to a staff member's leg and not letting go. The report found that repeatedly calling on law enforcement to deal with troubled youth only made matters worse for some of the state's most vulnerable children. In the wake of the report, there are now calls for reforms and the closure of some of the worst offending shelters. We're joined now by Karen Desaw, an investigative reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle, who co-wrote the piece. Karen, welcome to Forum.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. And I want to ask you, what prompted this investigation into the shelter system in the first place for you?
This investigation by the Chronicle's I-team, which is myself, Joaquin Palomino, and Cynthia Dizekas, is actually an issue that youth advocates have long been concerned about. The Youth Law Center here in San Francisco has spent many, many years trying to let people know why there are so many calls to police from these children's shelters that are really supposed to be a safe haven and a refuge for these children.
I mean, your report shows there were more than 14,000 calls for service to police and sheriff's department in 2015 and 16 from California's 10 shelter campuses. That's 14,000. I mean, tell us about the consequence of dialing the police, what you found at some of the worst offending shelters.
Sure. And just for a bit of context, the vast majority of those calls are reporting kids who have run away. And running away from a foster care facility can be anything from going across the street to search for a Wi-Fi hotspot or going to the mall, pretty normal teenage behavior, to, you know, the potentially dangerous situation of getting into a human trafficking situation or being on the streets in dangerous situations. So these shelters say they're required to report missing children. But among these thousands of calls, we found some really disturbing calls that led to arrests and bookings in juvenile halls. And my second to be sure is that this did not occur. These arrests did not occur at about four of these shelters to any great extent. They mostly occurred at about six, and one facility in particular led the pack with more than half of these bookings, and that is a shelter in San Joaquin County.
Yeah, your report really zooms in on this one troubled shelter, the Mary Graham Children's Shelter outside Stockton, which I believe housed some 515 children last year. You report it relied more heavily on police than any other shelter in the state, calling the San Joaquin County Sheriff's Office on average nine times a day. Nine times a day. That's unusual.
It is. And even more significantly, there were 200 bookings in the juvenile hall. And some of these kids spent days and days in jail cells awaiting a decision by either probation or the district attorney about whether to charge them. And what the law enforcement officials in that county told us is most of these kids from these shelters, they're not criminals. They're not public safety danger. They are children who are in great distress and despair, and they threw a chair or they punched somebody or they bit somebody when they were being physically restrained. They, you know, you mentioned the candy cane. We have a lot of very childlike behaviors that are quite predictable for kids who have experienced trauma, and quite concerning that those behaviors led to arrests, handcuffs, and jailings.
We're speaking with investigative reporter Karen Desaw. Give us a call. Join the conversation at 866-733-6786. What questions and concerns do you have about how California is running its shelters for abused and neglected youth? Should some of these shelters be closed down? 866-733-6786. We want to hear from you. 866-733-6786. Or get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. And Karen, tell us about these shelters. They're not necessarily the first stop for folks in the foster care system. It's sort of a more last resort.
Yeah, important context is needed here as well. So in the 2 years that we examined, there were only 10 California counties relying on shelters. Most children throughout California who come into the foster care system are taken either directly to emergency foster homes or placed with relatives. In some counties, they spend either 24 hours, like in San Francisco, or 72 hours in a short-term kind of intake assessment center before being placed. These shelters are kind of a holdover from the past, and they were somewhat sidelined in a sweeping reform underway in California to keep kids out of institutions and facilities unless absolutely necessary.
Talk about that. California is shifting away from residential foster care facilities. Governor Brown signed a law, I guess, at the end of 2015. Talk a little bit about that. Is it trying to decrease reliance on shelters?
Absolutely, in part. It's trying to decrease reliance on shelters. More broadly, it's trying to reduce reliance on what is known as group homes. Mm-hmm. Under the reform plans that are kind of many years in the making, children who are in need of specific and intensive treatment and therapy will spend up to 6 months in a treatment program if they need that kind of intensive 24-hour residential care. But children who were otherwise just being warehoused or who were in facilities and institutions unnecessarily will have the right to a family home that really all children deserve. Children thrive at home with families. And if they can't be with their parents, the next best thing for them is to be either with relatives or with foster families.
Can you clarify who runs these shelters and who oversees them, who's accountable? I mean, in many cases, as you're right, these were county shelters, but the state and others have a role. Clarify the hierarchy of who's running these.
Sure. So these are county facilities to the extent that they are either run, funded, and staffed by county employees, or they are contracted by counties. The overseeing agency is the State Department of Social Services Community Care Licensing Division, which is responsible for the care and supervision of children in any kind of state-licensed foster care facility.
Your story paints a pretty grim picture of this Mary Graham shelter. I guess I'm wondering, you know, what is your sense of what went wrong there? They had so many more calls for service and incidents.
Well, that's an excellent question. I want to say that these facilities, they're lovely. They look nice. They have delicious food. They have very, very caring staff. And this is not necessarily a story about bad people working in these places who don't care about kids. To the contrary, I think many of the staff at shelters are working very, very hard in conditions that could, by any measure, are challenging and difficult. That said, there seems to be an institutional culture there that uses this default of any explosive incident, a 911 call. Mm. And the juvenile hall nearby has really been used almost like a timeout room for kids. They pretty much mostly just come right back to the shelter. So if, I don't know if you're a parent, but if you think about it, if your kid got mad and punched the TV, your first reaction would probably not be to call the police. But if you punch a TV in some of these facilities, you could end up being arrested.
Interesting. We're speaking with San Francisco Chronicle reporter Karen DeSaw about her investigation into the state's youth foster shelters and their reliance on police and the criminal justice system to punish some kids in their care. Let's go to the phones. Pat in Petaluma, you're on the air. Welcome to Forum.
Yes. I just have some criticism of this reporter and San Francisco Chronicle in general. They just perpetually seem to point the dirty end of the stick to all institutions that have to handle the most difficult aspects of our civilization, whether it's criminals in jails, teachers trying to teach, or in this case, foster kids. I mean, it's just laughable the way she downplays people being punched and attacked and bitten. If you are a 100-pound woman and you have a 165-pound 14-year-old punching you in the face, that could kill that woman. And these are the things that these people have to deal with extremely limited budgets, extremely limited ways of handling it, And also the fact that if they so much as touch the kid, they're sued by everybody and have no defense. And so their only out is to call the police. And so, you know, they run these hysteria.
Well, fair point, Pat. We got your point. Thank you. Although the piece points out that the police were called for far less than punching and biting. But Karen, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, Pat. Well, I want to thank you for reading the San Francisco Chronicle and for paying such close attention and providing this feedback. I will say, for the record, we were surprised to find that in these shelters, staff are actually trained to expect, and it's very specific in some cases, the very policies of these facilities state, kids who have suffered trauma may bite you, they may punch you, they may kick you in an incident where you're trying to physically restrain them or they are blowing up emotionally, and you cannot call the police for that. These kids come to these places that by nature they are suffering despair and anguish. They're frightened. They're lonely. They're anxious. They may be angry. It's expected that they will be angry and upset and that they will lash out. And the staff who work in these places are trained to expect that. So then to turn around and press charges on those children who you know will display these behaviors.
Criminalizing these behaviors you know you've come to expect.
Right. And then to put them on the path of what that criminalization means. And I just want to pause for a moment and say that both state and nationwide, there is a growing focus on these kids they call crossover youth. And these kids cross over from the foster care system into the juvenile justice system to great detriment for their futures. And what is less looked at is how and why they make that crossover. And what we found in some cases, that the very foster care system designed to protect them is shoving them into that uncertain future of criminality.
We're talking about how California is running its shelters for abused and neglected youth. Give us a call and join the conversation. What are your questions at 866-733-6786? I want to hear from you at 866-733-6786. Let's take some more phone calls. Jennifer in Sacramento. Welcome to Forum.
Well, what exactly was just said is a really good point. I am a foster parent. I've had all kinds of kids from many, many counties across California. I've been a foster parent for over 5 years. And I've had kids who I wanted to keep in my home and I wanted to work with. The problem is trauma-informed care. That is talked about, but it isn't being done. I've had social workers from all over come out and tell me that I needed to punish someone who was having trouble.
Have you gotten the support you think you need?
One more time. I didn't hear you.
Have you gotten some of the support you think you need from some of the agencies that oversee
never.
The folks?
Never. It's very strange. There's one county. I don't want to say who it is. There's one county who does a great job. But they still don't give me the support that I'm asking for and I need. And it's not for me. It's for the children in my home. And there was a little girl who was with me for a long time, and the last thing I wanted was for her to go someplace else. I knew her bio parents. I knew her history. She wasn't reunifying. She was having a really hard time, and they didn't, just like she was saying, they did not have another solution. And when the police and the fire department came, she was combative with them, and at 10 years old was taken to juvenile hall, and then ended up in a group home. But that wasn't the solution. Mm-hmm. And I kept saying, if we don't do something, if we don't come together, this is what's going to happen. But it falls on deaf ears.
Jennifer, thanks for your call. She makes a good point about lack of support and falling on deaf ears there with agencies.
Yeah, and I'll just say, you know, there are many tragedies in the nation's largest foster care system here, but there are also many, many heroines and heroes, and certainly the whole statewide reform underway relies on folks like you, Jennifer, to have the resources you need and to be better prepared with the expected difficult behaviors. And I think when you have suffered severe abuse and neglect at home and then suffered the trauma of being taken from your parents, however flawed, that's another trauma, and then the trauma of being bounced around and not knowing where you're going next and being separated from your siblings and having your life be so confusing and frightening that quite frankly, the foster parents are on the front line of these difficult, difficult situations, and they, with the proper resources, can really help smooth these children's lives considerably.
Talk about some of the impact your investigative report is having. There have been some calls from lawmakers and others for reforms and changes. Talk about the impact.
So the impact has been quite significant. Our story posted last Thursday to our website, and it ran in the newspaper on Sunday. And we already have information that the Children's Bureau of Justice at the State Attorney General's office is concerned about this report and looking into it. We have a number of state senators and assembly members concerned and looking into it. On the local level, there have been some reviews of the Mary Graham Children's Shelter that have been called for. The director of the Mary Graham Children's Shelter has taken an abrupt leave from the facility. We're being told for medical reasons. But I think that most importantly, when this group home reform was launched in California, there were many folks, including the state officials, who did not want shelters to exist in the future. And they kind of cut a deal and said those shelters that are in existence can keep kids only for 10 days. So now we have more scrutiny on the ones that are holding over. There will only be 7 next year, and they can only keep kids for 10 days.
And we should underscore, we've reached out to county state officials who oversee these shelters. They declined to participate in today's show, and in some cases did not respond to our questions. Let's take some more calls. Lewis and Merced, welcome to Forum.
Hi. I heard the caller earlier come on and talk about, you know, how the people who run these facilities, the danger they're in. I just wanted to tell you what it's like to enter a foster care home for the first time. I'm 56 now. I was raised in foster homes. I can't tell you how many they put me in, but there's always a process. The first one is that they'll start with a hazing. So something will happen. The kids will all start saying something like, there's fungus among us, because it's a new kid. And they start intimidating him. I remember what I told your screener just now. One of the first times that I was in this one home, it was kind of a summer camp setup, the kind of thing where, you know, at lunchtime, you would get a tray and you would move down the line to get your food, et cetera. It was very, very cold and sterile. And that night, the very first night I was in that home, these kids jumped me in my bed. One was sound asleep. One hit me in the stomach with a table leg. And as I rose up from that impact, another one was waiting to clock me in the jaw. And this was on my first night. And I was expected to go to school the next day and just have a normal day. After being, you know, basically assaulted, and I mean physically assaulted badly. I mean, hit in the stomach as hard as he could with a table leg while you're asleep, and then a clock in the jaw after that. I was also put in one foster home because I had artistic talent. They put me in a foster home with nothing but gay kids. Now, don't get me wrong. I have nothing against gay kids. But when you're a young, straight, black male, that's a weird thing to do to a child and make him have to confront that. Well, you know, because it wasn't part of my makeup, outlook, mindset at all at that time.
Thanks for your call, Lewis. Appreciate it. But Karen, to his point about violence, not atypical of foster care, or?
Well, school campuses can be violent. Family homes can be violent. You know, I think that definitely what we found in the children's shelter is children fighting and assault charges being leveled at one or both children. Assault on staff, as I discussed earlier, also prevalent. But I think that criminalizing understandable, normal children's behavior, especially for traumatized children, it probably should be a crime itself. I will just say to the caller that if you're 56 and still reliving these experiences, and really, since we published our piece, we have heard from folks in their 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s who lived through foster care. And I just champion you kind of surviving and overcoming. And the reason that I'm so inspired to write about this child welfare system is because of the incredible in these incredible journeys these children go on and come out with this incredible insight and resilience. And we are happy to air the voices in our piece. We have a video documentary. We have wonderful clips from the children themselves speaking about their experiences. And I encourage you folks to go to our website and listen to the young people speak for themselves about what it was like to be in foster care and be arrested.
Well said. Courtney in San Jose, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm a juvenile justice commissioner here in Santa Clara County and also CEO of the Respect Institute. And I just want to really underline how important this report is, and that what you're showing in the report is that we have a shelter, what you could call like a shelter to prison pipeline for kids that really mimics what we already know is the school to prison pipeline. And the number one way to solve it is not only those policies. So, you know, we will be restorative with children and keep them connected to the adults and keep them in the safe space, just like we need to do with schools. But also, you know, it just shows a need for way more investment in the adults working in these facilities. I mean, they need rigorous self-care, and I'm not talking about bubble baths. You know, I'm talking about treatment for secondary trauma, which they're definitely experiencing, which leads to compassion fatigue, which leads to burnout. And like, I just can't deal with these kids. I'm going to call the cops. We see it happening in all of our systems. Police don't want to be responding in this way either. So they really need rigorous self-care, and we think that these systems are trauma-informed, and they're not. You know, just because you're working with traumatized populations doesn't mean you're actually trauma-informed and know how to deal with trauma. And I think that's what this report really unveils, is what's happening.
Courtney, Juvenile Justice Commissioner in Santa Clara County, thank you for your call. We appreciate it. And we're heading into a break. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio San Francisco. We're talking to Karen Desaa of the San Francisco Chronicle about her investigative report on the shelter system in California. This is a fundraising period for KQED, the last day. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Eric Westervelt. And Karen, let's get to Courtney's concern. She's saying this report is really underscoring the kind of shelter-to-prison pipeline.
Well, I think it's really important, the points Courtney raises, in large part to point out that Santa Clara County had one of the larger shelters, and they shut it down. It was a big, beautiful facility. It had cottages and a ballpark and an art room, and it was keeping kids so long they were fielding athletic teams. It was a kind of a darling of the Silicon Valley philanthropic community. The county officials and the juvenile court there said, wait, what's going on inside for kids? No matter how beautiful this facility is, inside, the kids are still pulling their clothes out of a communal dryer. They're still being cared for by three shifts of rotating line staff. And it's very hard in that environment to feel that you have self-worth, and that leads to these kind of blow-ups. So Santa Clara County shut down its shelter many years ago, and I'm glad they're still focusing on these issues.
And we should say we have a link up to this series on our website, kqed.org/forum, a link to the Chronicle's investigative report. Back to the phones, and Erica in Berkeley, welcome to Forum. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I really want to echo what Courtney said, too. So I've done quite a bit of research, unfortunately none of it published, much of it was for federal reviews. And what I observe is a pattern in which there is frequently many placement disruptions until a child reaches the highest level of care, and in many cases that's a group home, at which point they stabilize, and this is largely qualitative research. And in my review of these qualitative case records, I really feel that at times these group homes really do serve a unique purpose in terms of possibly having the staff that does have the trauma-informed care that you aren't necessarily able to achieve with family-based foster care. Now, granted, I wish that there were more family-based foster homes that could accommodate the needs of these kids, but until you have that, I think it's scary to me that so many of these group homes and shelters are being shut down when you don't have the alternatives already in place.
She raises a point, too, about what would happen to these kids if more shelters are closed down. Karen, you want to respond?
Yeah. Okay, let me just clarify. These shelters are, many of them, mostly serving children who have just come into the foster care system. So these are not kids who have been bounced around from many different homes because of difficult behaviors. That's a segment of the population. But most of these kids, it's their first stopover in the system. So they've literally just been removed either by social workers or in some counties by police officers from their parents. So that's one distinction to make. The other distinction is I don't think anyone in this field argues there isn't a place for kids to have some residential treatment when they have severe emotional or psychiatric problems. There is definitely a need, and a lot of those kids are the kids who have been bounced around a lot. I mean, there is a cause and effect issue, I think, to examine there. But I think there has to be more, there is currently being more rigorous definition of who needs to be in a treatment program. And that involves residential care. And when does it begin and when does it end? And how well are the staff trained? And do they understand trauma? And what are the standards? And are their programs being properly vetted and considered versus a kid who is just being warehoused because no one can find anywhere else for them to go?
Leona tweets at us. She says she's an administrative volunteer with a children's home organization. Quote, these kids should not be criminalized. They have suffered enough. And Charles online asked a good question. Is reliance on police due to legal limitations on staff directly handling the children and fears of liability from handling, if you can handle that?
I'm not entirely certain. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to venture to say. I know liability is an issue that is often raised. I also know that there are definitely ways to diffuse explosive incidents that do not rely on law enforcement that are perfectly legal. So at some shelters like Valley of the Moon in Sonoma County, like San Mateo County shelter, for instance, when kids, they display the same types of behaviors. They throw the chair across the room. They punch a wall. They are able to intervene in a way that dials the behavior back rather than escalate it. And when you talk about the facilities where they're more inclined to call law enforcement, I think perhaps the staff are less equipped to understand how to really reach a kid and talk them down.
And briefly, what kind of training requirements are there for shelter employees? Does it vary from county to county?
It does vary, but to be honest, we looked pretty carefully at the training and pay. And, you know, look, in some counties, the pay is actually $2 less than at the local In-N-Out Burger. But some of these shelter workers are borderline social workers. They're getting maybe close to $40 an hour. And they are, for the most part, all trained to some degree or other in, the buzzword is trauma-informed, but basically in how trauma and childhood trauma plays out in behaviors and how best to care for children who've suffered that trauma.
Well, we've been speaking with Karen Desaa, an investigative reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. We have a link to the Chronicle's investigative report at kqed.org/forum. Thanks so much for coming in, Karen.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. I'm Eric Westerveld, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Have a great afternoon.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.